My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me now and we will explore these topics and so much more with fascinating guests, authors, and experts who will guide us to Destination Unlimited. You've chosen to follow a new and different approach to life. Perhaps it is an esoteric path that has always fascinated you. You're studying the rituals and elements associated with that path in preparation for beginning the practice. But is there something more that is necessary to safely and fully experience the essence of what you're embarking on? My guest this week on Destination Unlimited, Ivo Dominguez Jr., says there is, and that is the deepening of your ability to sense, to clarify, and understand the rich worlds beyond the veils of the ordinary. Ivo, a visionary and practitioner of a variety of esoteric disciplines, was a founding member of Keepers of the Holy Chalice, the first coven of the Assembly of the Sacred, a Wiccan syncretic tradition that draws inspiration from astrology, Kabbalah, the Western magical tradition, and the folk religions of Europe. Ivo was also a professional astrologer, having studied astrology for more than 37 years. His website is www.ivodominguezjr.com. That's spelled IVODOMINGUEZJR.com. And he joins me this evening to discuss his latest book, Keys to Perception, A Practical Guide to Psychic Development. Welcome to Destination Unlimited, Ivo Dominguez Jr. Good evening, Ivo.
I'm delighted to be on with you tonight.
And thank you so much for joining us, because I think what you're going to share with our listeners and you share in your book is really important for anyone seeking an esoteric path.
Yes. The book was actually inspired because I've had many friends and also students and members of our organization that have over the year attended workshops that I've given on developing the inner senses, the psychic senses. And it's one thing to get to attend classes, but they said it would be delightful if we had a way to repeat the lessons in a better way. So I committed myself to writing, and I'm kind of glad I did, because I've had a lot of people coming to the woodwork that were part of my broader community that were not necessarily interested in the esoteric or metaphysical matters, but have always had an interest in just fine-tuning their intuition a bit more. So I discovered that I had more to share with people that were outside of the normal in-group, if you will.
Absolutely. And I think what you're hitting on is a truth, and that's that anyone who's had the ability or can get the ability to develop their psychic sense, their subtle energy senses, will benefit from that practice. So let's begin by sharing with our listeners about your personal path and how it led to your practice and your teachings.
I was one of those kids that never stopped sensing, feeling, noticing things in my immediate environment that kind of dropped away with childhood, or was taught away by people telling kids to stop paying attention to those imaginary friends that are not so imaginary. And I had the good fortune, and I recognize her, my grandmother Zenaida, because she very early on told me, it's real, it's true, others may not understand, but keep going. So I never shut down in the way that a lot of people were encouraged to. And I found it normal to incorporate my awareness of the simple things that everybody's experienced of. I know who's going to, you know, ring me on the phone next, or I have a sense of I'm about to receive a letter or a package from somebody I haven't communicated with in a while, and there it is, or something more dramatic of we were in San Francisco for a conference, and we were doing a walking tour, and then I said, you know what, I'm going to stay here, and I'm not going to get on that bridge for a few minutes, and lo and behold, we had a minor earthquake, and it wasn't anything dangerous or terrible, but I'm pretty sure I would have been less comfortable had I been walking on the pedestrian bridge during the earthquake.
Absolutely.
So I think that and the dead. I mean, I've had many experiences from the time I was a child with folks that have passed on, with beings that most folks would consider nature spirits or fae, and a variety of entities that I will call goddesses or gods. But I will always say that when you're talking about your inner experience, your mileage will vary compared to other people's experience.
Absolutely. You mentioned having the blessing of a wonderful grandmother who encouraged you to continue experiencing what you were experiencing. But I often meet people who relate stories of psychic awareness as children, only to say that the ability was shut down as they grew into adulthood. Why do you think that happens?
You know, I think part of it is cultural. We definitely, over the last several hundred years, have had a movement of, on one, there's always good and bad associated with any kind of progress, and progress is kind of a loaded term, but with an increasing awareness of the nature of our physical universe through the sciences, there was also a tendency to disregard or to devalue inner experiences that were harder to prove with weights and measures. So aside from religious reasons, there's also just been the trend to, if I can't weigh it, measure it, have instrumentation to prove it, then perhaps it isn't real. And I think that that seeps into the culture, in addition to certain religions being afraid of what people may experience. So it becomes the norm to exclude it. And frankly, one of the biggest things in childhood, whether it's from family or friends or through school, is to become normal, whatever that may mean in your community. And that usually means giving up those things that are harder to share directly. And we also have a lot of fear of mental illness, though I would argue that in cultures where these things are more openly embraced, people don't experience these things necessarily as indicators of imbalance or provokers of fear of losing their grip with reality.
Yeah, I was a child of the 50s and the 60s, and growing up being chastised for having imaginary friends or an overactive imagination, and then going into school and being put into the mold where you had to shift the side of the hemisphere of your brain that you operate from in order to learn and to be acceptable within the context of Western education. Do you think we need to bring something back into Western education to open up both sides of the brain?
I do think so, because one of the things that we give up in the process, and it's not without reason that culturally and historically, oftentimes people that were visionary or psychic or whatever the term of the culture was, often there was an overlap with musicians, with painters, with sculptors, with bards, with poets. Because I think that a goodly amount of creativity also arises not just from using both parts, both the hemispheres of the brain equally, but also when we train ourselves to exclude those things that are internal prompts or internal imagery or sensations, we also begin to, by accident, stifle the powers of creativity that live and breathe in the same place within our soul.
Absolutely. I think it's so essential that the future of our society and the world per se is really resting upon the fact that the children and the systems of education that we have here, especially in the West, are given the ability to bring out their creativity, to bring out their imagination, and to bring out the senses that they're using naturally without being told to shut them down. And I think our leadership, unfortunately, right now is kind of indicative of the generation that sort of lost that capability.
Yeah, I mean, let me give you a quick example that almost everyone has experienced. Have you been going down the road and for a moment you think that at the side of the road you see either an animal like a deer or something, or a bear or something identifiable, or something fantastical, and then you get closer and you realize, oh, it's just a bush that the light was hitting in just the right way, and it was next to a rock, and my mind turned it into this creature. Well, here's the thing. That's all. Sometimes that was a message. The fact that you chose to view it as a particular animal, that was a message. Whether or not it was actually ever physically there, it was potentially a message. But that same kind of loose, fluid reprocessing of experience is where we get ideas for new songs, new poems. And frankly, there's the classic story of the benzene molecule being impossible to figure out. The chemists couldn't figure out how the molecule fit together until, I can't remember his name, but the scientist in question had a dream of a serpent catching its own tail in its mouth. Mm-hmm. And then the next day he realized that benzene was actually a ring molecule where they basically bent back upon itself and bound to itself. And so all those resources, all those wellsprings of creativity and psychism are pretty much connected to the same portions of ourself.
Absolutely. And he also, in seeing that, also saw an ancient symbol, the serpent in a circle grabbing itself by the tail.
And that's something that folks that have background in symbology background in mythology would immediately latch onto, but we kind of have an impoverishment of the imagination when we don't make time for those sorts of stories, because we think that somehow or another we have to make sure that the only thing that is ingrained and stone into the stone of the mind of those children or young adults is that which would be. And by the way, I love the sciences. Don't get me wrong. I almost was a scientist. My original direction in college was geology. But it is limiting to not have the full array of what human culture has created. And the mythic and the esoteric and the subtle has always been there. And frankly, the Renaissance, one of the greatest explosions of science and art and creativity, was in some regards a reawakening of a remembrance of all the mythologies of the Western world, at least.
Absolutely. My guest this evening, Ivo Dominguez Jr., is the author of Keys to Perception, A Practical Guide to Psychic Development, and we'll be back with more on Destination Unlimited after these words.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Looking for inspiration?
Want to be inspired?
Not sure where to go?
Find Mark and Kim every Wednesdays at 3 p.m. Eastern on Inspired Living.
Topics will elevate consciousness and range from metaphysics to the human and social experience and all things spiritual.
Welcome to an inspired community that offers support, encouragement, and new ways of thinking.
You are the inspired and the inspiration.
Back on Destination Unlimited, my guest this evening, Ivo Dominguez Jr. He's the author of Keys to Perception, A Practical Guide to Psychic Development. Ivo, we talk about magic with a K. How do you define magic?
When I run into people out in the world, the first thing I say is that magic is prayer with muscle behind it. As a starting point, and that conveys the idea of you're taking your thoughts, your ideas, your visualization, your intention, and in addition to putting it out to whatever beings, if you believe in beings, may want to be of help or assistance to you, you are also contributing your energy or your K capability to make it so, whether that means divining or sensing what the best option is next, or if that means putting out a feeler to attract what you need. Because if you believe, as many people do, that everything that exists has spirit in it, has essence in it, has soul, whichever words you like, then you are made out of the same stuff that made the universe, and therefore to some small degree also contain the power of creation within you. And magic is about co-creating, if it was one way of looking at it, and another is figuring out how to work with the forces of nature. And in some ways it's no different than science, except instead of figuring out how to create a wing so that you get the most lift on a plane, it's about creating the right state of mind where you allow yourself to act as the best conduit for the power that's flowing through everything.
And the word intention is really important here.
You know, it is, because though I will say that as incredibly important as intention is, it is also important to be cognizant of skill and knowledge of how to proceed, because you can have the greatest, clearest intention and still not quite get there. But intention is a starting point, because it's also a way of creating a bridge of communication between your normal waking consciousness self that's listening to me right now and speaking in words and images, and putting it down to or up to the parts of you that speak in essence, that speak in a more abstracted sense of what reality is. And intention is kind of a way to communicate to those parts of us that are less verbal.
Absolutely. Does everyone have the capacity for developing their psychic and subtle senses?
Absolutely. And for me, it's a logical and natural outcome that if you believe that, and I do, that everything is endowed with spiritual essence or spiritual property, whatever you want to call that, then to some degree you have to have it. Now, it can also be compared to something like mathematical ability or musical ability, or somebody being an excellent cook or having great dexterity with tools or with paints or with knitting or whatever. It's something that can be developed. Now, not everybody's going to have a voice to make a living as a singer, but most people can hum to themselves or sing a tune to themselves that brings them joy and or strength in darker times. So I think that we all have the capacity to develop up to a point, and that it's not all one and the same. I mean, there's a wide array of possible psychic abilities. And as with any human skill, I would say, it's great to try to develop whatever you have to its greatest potential. But first you have to believe that the potential exists for it to reveal itself.
Let's say you do believe. How do you determine which of the faculties will work for you?
Well, I'm going to start backwards. First one is throw away any expectation that you have. So, for example, I have a dear friend who was always bemoaning the fact that when she was in powerful spiritual locations, whether that was a stone circle or a cathedral or in the midst of a ritual with a bunch of friends, it's, well, I never see anything. Because in her mind, she had so strongly associated the idea of, if I'm not seeing in Technicolor, Pixar special effects kind of stuff, then I'm not perceiving anything. But then, you know, but then you say, well, okay, so why, when we were walking around in that field that had the stone circle in it, why did you walk over to that corner and stand by that tree? Oh, because it felt warmer and it felt more peaceful there. That was psychic perception as well.
Absolutely.
When she's asked to help somebody, if she also does body work, massage, and a variety of things. Well, how do you know sometimes where you need to go to work where somebody has more pain or discomfort or tension? And because I said, I've seen you do it, and you're before they tell you where it's hurting and before they move in a way that would reveal it by your physical senses, you already know where your hands need to go. Oh, okay, that's also psychism. So part of it's recognizing that she's actually very psychic, but she wanted so desperately to see that that she was, it's almost like, I can't possibly be doing it because the one thing I decided represents psychism I can't do. So part of it is accepting the gifts you have, and a lot of times the other ones that you will begin to develop as a natural consequence of working from your strengths first.
If someone is a visual person, they say, I see your point of view, or I see what you're saying. Is that someone who perhaps is tending toward clairvoyance?
Can be, but depending upon the rest of their makeup, their psyche, their temperament, they may need to learn to loosen up. So, for example, one of the examples I give a lot is I'm not a great artist, but I do like to paint. I took a course in college for non-art majors that was oil painting, and one of the first things they had us do was the evil student teacher put a bowl, a white ceramic bowl with on a table, had a white tablecloth, and in it were white light bulbs, white marble shapes, everything was white on white on white on white on white. And the instructions were that you had to paint it, but you had to use at least four colors. You could not just do black and white. And a lot of people, you know, groaned and moaned. And then the longer you look, the more you realize, oh, the light coming from that side of the room is slightly yellow because it was incandescent lights back then. And the little bit of light coming through that one window over there is slightly bluer. And then you began to notice all the subtle interplay of pastel colors across all the objects. Well, if you're a visual person, the first thing is to cease the summarization and being efficient and become less efficient so you can actually perceive what's in front of you.
Absolutely. Many of us have found that meditation is the key for opening or reopening subtle senses. And I know that you advocate this practice, as you say, to clear and brighten the mind. What would you suggest to beginning meditators?
Do not expect to clear your mind immediately. Do not expect it to be something that you can maintain for a long period of time. The mind is like the body. It requires flexibility and strength. If I ask someone to lift something that was, you know, a couple of pounds heavier than it was comfortable for them and hold it out in front of you, well, you wouldn't be able to hold it very long before your arm would tire and you'd have to bring it down. But if you did it every day or every, you know, couple of days a week, by the end of the month, by the end of 6 months, you'd find that you could hold that heavy object before you perfectly still for a longer, much longer period of time. In some ways, it's a question of recognizing that the mind itself has to develop strength and flexibility. And a lot of times, things will begin to burble up, whether it's mind chatter or emotions or whatnot. And it's eventually, if you allow it all to burble up, and it's like when a house has been shut down for a long time and the plumbing hasn't been used, you have to turn all the faucets on and let the water run until it goes from brown to yellow to clear and all the debris has been flushed loose. You have to give meditation enough time to actually flush things clear as well.
What type of exercises would you recommend for beginning meditators?
First, ask yourself who you are. For example, a few days ago, we had a large event here, a lot of people at the house. I told one person that they should meditate while walking first. There's somebody who is very energetic and constantly in motion. So I said, part of the problem is you're not ready to sit. You're not ready to be still in the physical sense. So take a walk, and we live across from a state forest and in the woods. I said, take a walk, and for the next 10 minutes, do nothing but pay attention to the shape of the leaves and the sound of the wind. Until in the process of walking, that used up their kind of fidgety nervous energy, and after a while, paying attention to the shape of the leaves and the sound of the wind was their first step towards being then capable of sitting and paying attention to the sound of their breath and just being in their body.
Mm-hmm.
So it's about figuring out where you are and not fighting who you are, but tailoring it to what is going on. And there's 1,001 methods for meditation, but I think the key in all of them is to embrace who you are as the starting point and jump off from there.
Absolutely. My guest this evening on Destination Unlimited, Ivo Dominguez Jr. He's the author of Keys to Perception, A Practical Guide to Psychic Development. Ivo, please tell our listeners where they can get your book and find out more about you.
Well, the easiest place to catch up with me is EvoDominguezJr.com. And you spelled it out earlier, and thank you for that. I'm also on Facebook if you want to find me there. And I am currently really happy because Keys to Perception, A Practical Guide to Psychic Development is through Wiser Books, which means you can pick it up at almost, Barnes & Noble has it. A lot of the independent bookstores have it. And there's lots of online sources, which I don't need to name because you already know those. But I'm going to put in a plug for support your local brick-and-mortar bookstore.
Absolutely.
Because that's so important.
I so agree. Those stores are where I had my foundation in finding metaphysical books and books on magic and books on all the wonderful things we're talking about. And unfortunately, the original Wiser bookstore from Lower Manhattan has gone a long time.
Yeah.
Those brick and mortar places are so important. And you don't have to buy them. You can take them, sit and read there in the aisles.
Well, and so many times, at least for me, and I met interesting people at those stores.
Absolutely. People to help you on your path.
Got guidance and suggestions on what to read next, or simply somebody else to listen for a moment, or for me to have the opportunity to listen and go, okay, I hear you, and there's a support. Even if you're not a person that's into being in a group or anything organized, we have a need for other people to support us in the journey.
Absolutely. And listen, buy Ivo's book. I wasn't suggesting that you sit in the aisle and read Ivo's book and not buy it. Buy Ivo's book. And we'll be back with more of Ivo Dominguez Jr. on Destination Unlimited after these words from the Om Times Radio Network.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
Change and growth are part of natural life, and also part of your spiritual life. Everyone needs support and guidance, especially during life passages. Upgrade yourself with the Om Times Experts program. With Om Times Experts, you have access to the best intuitive coaches, spiritual teachers, counselors, astrologists, and oracles. Our team was carefully selected so you can trust. Find out more at experts.omtimes.com.
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Alaya, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
Listen, as a hiring manager, I've got to tell you, the best job candidate isn't always the typical candidate. Sometimes they're a grad of life.
Meet the grads of life. Young adults of unique determination and experience, an ideal fit for your company in an entry-level position, internship, or mentorship. They might not have every qualification you typically look for, but they're exactly who your company needs.
Sometimes the best candidates aren't the ones you're used to.
Go to gradsoflife.org to learn how to find, cultivate, and train this great pool of untapped talent. Brought to you by the Ad Council and gradsoflife.org.
This is OTR-FM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
Back on Destination Unlimited, my guest this evening, Ivo Dominguez Jr. He's the author of Keys to Perception, A Practical Guide to Psychic Development. Ivo, we talked earlier about those who said they were more open as children, only to find their faculties supposedly shutting down in early adulthood and based on the social and cultural factors that they grew up in. What role can the memory of those experiences play in bringing back that acuity?
Well, memory is a funny thing. Some memories memories we hold on to without being aware of, and then they return as needed. And there's also the idea of memory is not just a local phenomena. Most of the listeners probably heard of the idea of the difference between the mind and the brain, between the physical substrate that's the brain and the mind, which is the actual being, the person themselves. It's in the same way that a radio is just the physical receiver for the waves that are then turned into sound or light if it's TV or something else. And if you are looking at psychic perception, you're also putting at least a toe, if not more, into the idea of memory is everything. Your memories are not just limited to the memories that you have in your own brain, but also that mind, which is yours, that has existed before you were born and will exist after you depart your body. It's also the mind that connects to all those that were part of your lifeline, your ancestors, all those that were your extended community. So in opening to the idea that memory is more than something personal and local, you begin to get glimpses not just of future things, but also get an opportunity to revisit and re-experience your own path that led you up to that moment, and sometimes those of the surrounding people. So I tell people there's an exercise about training the far memory and training the memory in general. And it also allows you to not be afraid. The more you are, people sometimes block things that are difficult or painful, and there's plenty of people to block traumatic memories. But there's also the fear of experiencing something that is difficult and dreadful, which also will shut down psychic perception. And yet, if you trust that everything that's information is potentially useful to you, and everything that is remembered can serve some good, then you change your relationship to knowing. And when you change your relationship to knowing, then you begin to recall all the times that you experienced something that was then validated, and you begin to recall things that you haven't actually had happen to you yet.
That's fascinating. You know, a lot of people talk about tapping into this, shall we say, the universal consciousness or universal memory. Some people talk about what's known as the Akashic Records. Is that what you're talking about when you talk about the non-local memory?
It can be that, but I'll say that it's also think that it's the far memory, which is not necessarily, you know, the Akashic Records is the totality of things. But I'm going to suggest that for most people, the equivalent of the Akashic Bookmobile has more than enough answers and is easier to get access to. I don't know who said it originally, but Renaissance fairs and other places, more than once friends have said, you don't chain a dragon to roast your chicken because you'll just have an angry dragon and a cinder for a meal. And in some cases, just learning to expand your reach of this universal memory into just a larger pocket. Think of it as concentric circles surrounding with your home bases being your memories, and then a little bit more, a little bit more, a little bit more, so that you don't become overwhelmed. And so that if you were dropped into, the Library of Congress, and you had 10 minutes to find some piece of information, you probably couldn't do it. So the part of it is allowing yourself to develop a relationship to the part of you that finds information. There's an exercise that we don't have time to cover completely, but the idea is that there's a part of you that when you ask yourself, I need to remember something, think of it as a little search engine or a little sprite or a little entity within you that quickly rummages through everything within or near you and then deposits it in front of you in your mind's eye or in your mind's ear. Well, if you become aware of and make friends with that part of you that is the being within you that is memory itself, then you begin to have a helper in finding those memories.
The inner internet.
Yeah, the inner internet, the internet research assistant, if you will.
Or the personal Google.
And in some cases, medium psychics that speak of having a spirit that assists them. And in some cases, there is a helper spirit. And in some cases, it's a more fully developed relationship with that being that lives within themselves that is memory.
Absolutely.
One of the gods or goddesses within.
Absolutely. Talking about the mind, in Keys to Perception, you mentioned the three selves. What are those parts of our makeup, and how do they interrelate?
You know, the part of us that's talking right now is the middle self, or the normal waking consciousness, or the representational language and imagery and emotion linear self views the universe as models or as mechanisms. And that's where we primarily live and where a lot of our control issues lie, where we grip the wheel of consciousness too tightly so that we have white-knuckle experiences of moving through time and space. The lower self, the primal self, the younger self, the animal self, is more closely connected to all the energy that flows around us. It's the place where the power, when you see birds in flight moving perfectly together or a school of fish moving perfectly together, it's because they're living through their lower self. And humans partake of all three levels, if you will. And that animal self, that primal self, is directly plugged into the flow of life of spirit, which is the psychism, and that's where a lot of our intuition bubbles up from. But there's also the higher self, or divine spark, or fill in the or neshama, fill in the blank if you want to do the Kabbalah. I mean, this maps pretty easily onto Kabbalah as well, or Huna, or a dozen others, or basic shamanism. But the higher self is that which is integrative and also contains the Rosetta Stone for making sense of everything in the universe. It contains the templates, contains the patterns so that we can understand where things are unfolding too. And it's only when all three of those layers of the self, those three selves within, are in full communion connection to each other that we have full access to our humanity, which is also a kind of lesser form of divinity. It, from my perspective, we're all in process towards becoming divine, whether your philosophy or religion means that you're going to reunite with it, or whether you're evolving to grow up to be one of them, it doesn't matter to me. But the idea is those three selves, and they each have their own methods for how to be developed. I will say in the book that there is stuff that will immediately be valuable to people that have just taken one step on the path, and there's other things that you may read this book once and then go back to it and discover that the part that you are now ready for is 5 years down the road. It's a multi-layered book.
Absolutely. You know, it's funny, when you talk about that, I remember in my own personal path of reopening and redevelopment that there was stuff that immediately resonated with me and stuff that didn't resonate with me but came 10 years later.
Yeah, and that's normal. And, you know, patience is such a troubling word for a lot of people, but consistency of effort is the thing that yields results.
Absolutely.
And letting it unfold.
Absolutely. You know, I know of people who complain of being too psychically open and not being able to handle it, letting the floodgates roll. What suggestions would you offer to them?
Well, there's a longer process and techniques, but I'm going to start with a very simple one of an affirmation. And I actually do this one with some regularity. Every 2-3 years, I need to go back to being a regular practice. Only show me those things where I have a capacity to do something about it or pass that information on to somebody else who can, or where I can warn someone. If I cannot act upon this information, please, I don't need to see it or know it.
Mm.
Because a goodly amount of the tension or stress is when you are getting information, whether it's emotions from other people or imagery or precognitive flashes, and if you have no way to take a positive or useful action, and sometimes the only useful action is being prepared so that you can cope better or pass it on to somebody else, but if you have no way to take use of that information, then it becomes a burden, or it can become something that is experienced as a painful thing or as a punishment or something that diminishes the quality of your life. And anything that consistently hurts that lower self, that primal self that is where most of that intuition gushes out of, is going to start shutting it down because it wants to defend you against discomfort.
And what about people who actually take this viscerally?
Well, train yourself to do otherwise. For example, my earliest formal training was actually in mediumship, which I didn't like doing and eventually stopped doing. But and part of it was there was a weekend intensive I was part of, and sitting at the piano was told, you know, tell me what about the person who belonged to this piano, or other way around. And I started telling about the person's life, and I got an increasingly painful heaviness in my chest and sharp pains going up my left arm, and of course the person had died of a heart attack.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And for a long time, every time that I did any work, not just mediumship work, I would have strong physical sensations. And part of it was part of me was loving it because it's proving to me that this is real, because there's the whole thing about needing to believe that it's true. And on the other hand, it was really a bad idea. So I began to tell myself and pay attention to the pain or discomfort and imagine, rather than feeling the pain, that I saw an image of the person having a heart attack, or that if I had discomfort, that I'd see, you know, a flush of red to indicate the pain. So I began to train myself to give non-physical, either visual, auditory, or symbolic cues to replace the sensations that I was having. So whenever I had a sensation, I would then imagine, please replace it with the following, so that I'll totally calibrate and know what it means, but no longer experience it directly.
Sage advice. My guest this evening, Ivo Dominguez Jr. He's the author of Keys to Perception, A Practical Guide to Psychic Development. And we'll be back with more of Ivo after these words on the Om Times Radio Network.
Humanity Healing International is a small nonprofit with a big dream. Since 2007, HHI has been working tirelessly to bring help to communities with little or no hope. Our projects are not broad mandates, nor are they overnight solutions, but they bring the reassurance that no one is alone and that someone cares. To learn more, please visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
Hello! Join us, Lisa Berry and Michelle Carter, every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time for the Mindset Makeover, What's Possible? Get ready to become present, clear, and unstuck, and start living fully, led by your heart, while you listen and feel this transformation through vibration of word, sound, and song. You'll open up to what's possible and experience your shift.
Hi, this is Sylvia Henderson, intuitive life coach and energy healer. Are you ready to elevate and rise way above your normal? Be sure to listen to my show, Intuitive Transformations, on Om Times Radio, Sunday evenings at 9 p.m. Eastern. Get the inspiration you need to transform your life.
Keyboard Cat, Hamilton the Pug, and Toast Meets World. These are some of the internet's most beloved pets, and they all have one thing in common. Their stories started in a shelter. Start your story. Adopt a dog or cat today. Visit theshelterpetproject.org to find a pet near you. Training that pet to play the keyboard, that's optional. Start a story. Adopt a shelter or rescue pet today. Brought to you by Maddie's Fund, the Humane Society of the United States, and the Ad Council.
When it comes to parenting, there are no perfect answers. But that's okay, because you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Teens in foster care will love you just the same.
For more information on adoption, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
Back on Destination Unlimited, my guest this evening, Ivo Dominguez Jr. He's the author of Keys to Perception, A Practical Guide to Psychic Development. In Keys to Perception, you discuss an exercise you developed called the Invocation of the Eternal Now. What benefit is derived from this, and how is it practiced?
Okay, let's talk about what I mean by the eternal now. Most people that are doing exploring quickly realize that time is a little bit more malleable and a little bit more flexible than we experience it. It's not just the linear tick-tock of the clock. And some people will jump to the time is an illusion, or they make distinctions between time that's linear or time that's eternal, time that's less like a river and more like the ocean, etc. And I'd like just to bring the image for a moment of a glass ball, a sphere, and putting it rolling across a tabletop. And as it rolls across that tabletop, it only touches the tabletop in one point as it rolls across. And that's people's experience of the now. There's just one tiny little dot connecting with the surface of space-time, our experience of it. When people are doing meditative work or psychic work, what I think is happening in part, and this is a way of expressing the idea, it's not literal, you go from experiencing the now as a dot and then slowly becomes a small sphere, a small ball of perception, and a larger one, that begins to include not just that instant in linear time, but somewhat before and somewhat after, and also somewhat to the left and right. And what I mean by the left and right, the possible didn't quite manifest into reality futures that are parallel to the one that you're in, and the above, which contains all the possibilities that are yet to be and have already been. So that it's an exercise that stretches the mind a bit, encourages connection between the three selves, but also teases you, massages, let's call it massages because it's about stiffness of consciousness, to expand that perception of what your eternal awareness is, that center of consciousness, like a center of gravity, from one tiny little dot to something that is more like a volume of space-time that you become aware of. And in the most extreme case, if that volume of awareness was infinite, then you'd be one and the same as a God's eye view, if you will.
What people used to refer to as cosmic consciousness.
Yeah, but once again, I'm taking it a step at a time, so that it's a question of slowly expanding your awareness rather than trying to. One of the problems with jumping to the top level or the most expansive level first, it's the same as if you walk, say, from old style basement that has a door that opens up into the backyard, and you've been in the dark of the basement, and then you open the door and step out into full sunlight. Your eyes are unaccustomed. They go from dark to light, and you can't see anything.
Mm-hmm.
Or if any other scenario where if it's too much too fast, there's no adaptation time, which means that your perception is going to be unclear, and to some degree unsound, because it's blurred by, contaminated by the experience of more than you were ready to achieve. So the eternal now exercise really now, and one of the things people say is I'm not good at, and fill in the blank for whatever it is when you tell them to do exercises. And if you told me that you were going to play piano 20 minutes after sitting in front of the keyboard, I'd say good luck. So I encourage people to actually do the exercise repeatedly and slowly, and eventually clicks in. And for those people that are lovers of sacred geometry, there's a lot of sacred geometry that is actually hidden in the pattern of the working. There's spheres, there's tetrahedrons, there's octahedrons, and look up your platonic solids before doing the exercise if you feel like you really need to geek out to think a little bit more. But it is a way of talking to other parts of you, and I'm going to say that a lot of times, because we are a much more elaborate, and each of us is an entire community of life. We're if you believe in past lives, you're all the lives you've been. If you don't, then you at least know that you have all that came before you through your bloodline. If you look at the human body, it's just like the earth in that it is filled with many living beings. I mean, there are more. There's more flora and fauna living in your gut and on your skin and your hair and your fluids. If you counted all the cells in you that are not made out of human flesh, they're smaller, so there's actually more of them. You're actually outnumbered. You are a living ecology physically, so why would you think differently when you think of being a living ecology of different kinds of spirit and mind and consciousness as one, becoming one living being? We're like the Earth Mother. We are a whole community of life. And this is a way of, through geometry, visualization, and slow expansion of becoming aware of the fact that you include this whole community of spirit within you.
I remember a line from an old Moody Blues song that said, "Each day has its always." The eternal
yes.
Now.
Yep. There is an eternal now, and that eternal now contains past, present, future, and all the things that could have, might have been as well.
Absolutely. Many with developed psychic faculties can communicate with spirits. Now, can anyone learn to do this? And more importantly, is it safe to do?
It's safe to do as long as you act like a reasonable human being.
Wait a minute. Reasonable human beings?
That's the problem. When you meet somebody, being polite is always a good idea.
Yes.
And a certain amount of trust is a reasonable idea, but it takes time before somebody proves themselves reliable and decent and good. And when we hear of people getting themselves in trouble with working with spirits of various kinds, whether they're human or not, it's the same kind of madness that I would say if somebody decides that somebody that they just met on the internet is exactly how they're describing themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a question of verify, prove, test, see what happens. Don't give somebody the keys to your house until you've known them for a while. And listen to whether or not the spirit that you're communing with or communicating with is telling you something that you and here's the self-awareness part. Is it feeding something that if it's a fear that you have and they're feeding the fear, is it simply another part of you, or frankly there are plenty of spirits that are the equivalent of practical jokers and juvenile delinquents. Simply because something doesn't have a physical body does not necessarily mean that it is a superior character or intellect or goodness.
Absolutely.
So treat the spirit world the way you treat the physical world. Test, verify, be cautious, and over time things will prove themselves or not.
Absolutely. You know, in my work with paranormal teams, it would always disturb me when I would see people do what they call provoking, where they're talking to a spirit, challenging or threatening a spirit
in some way.
I said, if that person was standing there in a physical body, would you use the same words that you just used if someone were there who could actually come back and punch you or react to you and push it back at you? And, you know, respect, that's what it comes down to. It's respect not only of the spirit, but respect for yourself. And it's so important that everyone extend respect to those embodied and those out of body and give the same compassion, respect, and kindness that you would to someone physically standing in front of you.
And verify what's going on. I helped out at a house that was having some issues, and ultimately they thought it was something that was not pleasant. And in the end, these were people that were spiritual people, and they decided to put protective blessings on their houses and on the land because there had been a number of issues with a variety of things. Seems reasonable, except that they put a line of crystals in the soil to mark off their territory to keep out the energy of the unpleasant neighbors, and they cut straight through a place that the local nature spirits considered one of their own.
Mm.
So they were having disturbing things occurring in the house and disturbing dreams. And I was brought in and ended up communicating that basically it's like, pull back that line, you're intruding on their territory, and everything went fine.
Mm-hmm.
But it was not evil nor malignant nor malevolent. It would be the equivalent of you built a fence through a neighbor's yard without their permission.
Absolutely. Just, again, having compassion and understanding for what you're doing and treating everyone and everything as you would treat yourself, in essence.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of information in Keys to Perception. What would you like readers to take away from Keys to Perception?
If you're secular and don't believe in any of this, then what I want you to take away is learning how to see and experience the world more fully with your physical senses and being more alive in it. If you are wanting to develop your psychism for your own personal use, then I want you to feel that in any given day you can extend your senses and get guidance. And if you go more deeply, then become a practitioner that helps to raise it up so that others who follow after you have somebody that can say, hey, can you help me out with this? Can you teach me this?
Absolutely. My guest, Ivo Dominguez Jr., his book, Keys to Perception, A Practical Guide to Psychic Development. Ivo, please tell our listeners one more time where they can get your book and find out more about you and this work.
Easiest for me is ivodominguezjr.com. You can also find my book pretty much any physical bookstore or pretty much all your online vendors. It's being widely distributed, and I'm very grateful for that.
Ivo, there is so much that you and I could share and talk about, and we have to have you on again. And whether you have a new book or not, there are so many wonderful things that you've brought to people that I'd love to share with our listeners. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. It's been great.
And thank you for joining us on Destination Unlimited. I'm Victor the Voice Furman. Have a wonderful week.